Well, my next guest here at the UFO International Congress needs very little introduction. He's almost a legend in this business. He was working at the Stanford Research Institute, working with the government program and the CIA on remote viewing. And he's probably one of the most knowledgeable sources of remote viewing anywhere in the world. Russell Tark, welcome to Now That's Weird.
Well, I'm happy to be with you. This is my first introduction to a UFO conference. I felt that after 30 years of work in remote viewing, I should give up my ignorance about UFOs and see what research is being done there. So this is a very stimulating conference, a lot of serious-minded people, and remarkable data is presented.
And are you staying for the whole week?
Yes, I'll be here for a week.
Well, you better tune into my talk on Saturday morning then in that case. Now, Russell, tell us how it got started with the Stanford Research Institute.
In 1972, Hal Puthoff, is another laser physicist, and I petitioned to NASA and to the Central Intelligence Agency to support the work that we just started to do in remote viewing. Hal and I were both interested in extrasensory perception, and we were fortunate enough to team up with Ingo Swann, who's a New York artist and a lifelong psychic practitioner. And Swann quickly weaned us away from guessing the contents of an envelope or pictures in the next room, and he brought us to the larger world stage where we were encouraged to ask people to describe what's happening at different places throughout the world. And he was able to do that. We would give him geographical coordinates, latitude and longitude, and ask him to describe what was happening there and what it looked like. Or we would send a person to a distant location and ask him to describe what that person was experiencing and, again, what was happening at the distant location. We then were able to interest the CIA in this ability. We thought that it might be useful to them. And like every researcher, we're looking for financial support for our work. So we made a deal with the devil that we would provide them with operational information of where is a downed bomber, what are the Russians doing, what are the Chinese doing, and so forth. And that would, of course, be classified secret if they would support our research effort where we would try and understand the nature of psychic functioning and how it is that we can describe things thousands of miles away and in the future. And that deal held firm for 23 years. We were able to publish our findings about the non-local nature of psychic ability. We could publish them in Nature magazine, the Proceedings of the Institute for Electrical Engineering, the American Academy of Sciences, and so forth. And at the same time, we would keep secret the fact that this was supported by the CIA and the Defense Intelligence Agency.
It's an interesting area, remote viewing, because so many people for so many years have said that it doesn't work, it's not been proven. And yet when you show evidence like you did in your talk this week of the success rate of doing this, why do you think so many people dismiss it?
The only reason a person would dismiss remote viewing is because they're ignorant. The data for remote viewing is overwhelming. We have published findings, and other people have also. This is not just something with California psychics, but this work has been done at Princeton University and University of Edinburgh, University of Utrecht in Holland. It has been widely replicated throughout the world. And not only that, remote viewing is easy to do. If anyone were to simply look at the papers that we publish where we show the drawing that a person has made in the laboratory and compared that with the actual location, these drawings are often of architectural accuracy, and there's no doubt that the person was experiencing a distant place. And in fact, the CIA would not have supported us for 23 years if we were not providing them with useful information, because they experienced local teasing for supporting psychic stuff. But we were very valuable to them, as we found kidnapped agents, downed airplanes, described what was going on in weapons factories, looked in on atomic bomb tests of the Chinese. We had all sorts of very exciting real-life activities that we pursued through that long period of time.
It is amazing, some of the results and some of the photographs you showed and the drawings you showed up on the stage in your talk. What about the actual test you did with the audience here? Because you gave two tests to the audience to try to see how they got on with the remote viewing. How did you feel the results of that went?
Remote viewing is a natural ability that we all have. So I don't really teach permission. I just travel around the world giving people permission to make use of an ability they already have. So we had about 800 people in the audience here, and I spent an hour describing how psychic functioning works to the best of our knowledge, what's required, what are the capabilities, basically setting the stage for people to willingly demonstrate their own ability. I did not make this a kind of test. There's no such thing as trying to do remote viewing. So I appeared a little bit like Yoda. I said, there's only doing, there's not trying. So after I described the sources of mental noise that interfere with psychic functioning, the noises such as memory and imagination and analysis and naming and grasping all interfere with our ability to do remote viewing. I then said that I had brought an interesting object from California. It's quite an unusual thing that I had brought, so they wouldn't be able to name it, so don't even try and name it. Just quiet your mind now and make a little drawing of the surprising object that appears in your awareness, is what I said. And it was a kind of demand situation where I said, all right, we're ready, start drawing now. And this audience of 800 did surprisingly well, so that when I unveiled the object I was using for them to see and draw, there was a gasp of recognition across the room, and many people rushed up to the stage to show me the very accurate little drawings they had made of my quite unusual object.
Now, you mentioned Uri Geller in your talk as well. I know Uri was involved in initial projects at Stanford Research Institute, and you made the comment that you thought Uri's talents were good, but not certainly the best that you'd had there.
Yeah, Geller certainly has psychic ability. We did many picture drawing experiments, and we published those in our first paper in Nature. But Geller is not particularly the most psychic person we worked with. We worked with Hella Hammond and Ingo Swann and Pat Price and Joe McMonagall, who are very reliable journeyman remote viewers that we worked with for a decade. Geller was quite good, and I don't mean to denigrate his ability. In fact, since most people have psychic ability, it would be silly to say everyone has ESP except for Geller, who doesn't have any. So the fact that Geller, who came forward as a psychic practitioner, the fact that we find he has psychic ability should not be surprising.
I agree. Now, perhaps you could just very quickly answer one for me personally. I had an experience at someone trying to show me remote viewing about 5 years ago, and the experience seemed to take me out of the Earth through the atmosphere, around the red planet two or three times and back. And what was being explained to me at the time was I was being taken into the future to view the future. And what I saw was the whole of the west coast of America covered in like a yellow dust at some point in the future, some way yet to go. Now, do you think this was a proper remote viewing, or do you think this was just like some sort of daydream in a trance state?
Well, we don't know whether California is going to slip into the sea. I tend not to do precognition experiments into the far future, because you never get any feedback. It's not necessary to go around the planet to do remote viewing into the present or in the future. If you quiet your mind and say, I would like to see the pictures on the cover of the New York Times from tomorrow, you can describe those pictures even though they're not yet chosen. The future is available to you. I have a book called Limitless Mind that I published a couple of years ago with New World Library, and Limitless Mind is a small book describing the protocol that we used at SRI, so that if somebody wants to learn to do remote viewing with a friend, I give practice routines and describe the successes and the hindrances to remote viewing, so a person can learn to incorporate that kind of spatial experience into their lives.
So what next now for Russell Targ?
Well, the immediate next thing is, after having written half a dozen books about psychic things, I just finished writing my autobiography, The Memoirs of a Blind Biker, because my vision is very poor, but nonetheless, I've been riding my Nighthawk through the hills of San Francisco for past 35 years, and I describe what it was like growing up in New York City as a very visually handicapped young person, and how that led me into doing professional magic, and that led me to ESP research. And then, of course, I had a other career as a laser physicist, which is how I paid the bills for most of my life.
Now, is there a website where people can find out more about you, Russell?
I have a website, www.espresearch.com, and that shows the materials that I've been working with and also gives a way to communicate with me.
That's brilliant. Russell, thank you for taking the time to talk to us today. Really appreciate it, and I hope to get you back on the show to talk some more real soon.
Very happy to talk with you.